Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Dude Therapist. We have Sarah Moore, who is the author of Peaceful Discipline, Story Teaching, Brain Science, and Better Behavior, and the founder of Dandelion Seeds Positive Parenting. As a master trainer in conscious parenting and board member for the American Society for the Positive Care of Children, she's also a public speaker, armchair neuroscientist, and most importantly, a mama. With training in child development, trauma recovery, interpersonal neurobiology, improv comedy, and play, her work supports parents and caregivers around the globe. Check her out on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, Pinterest, and Threads. Sarah is a wonderful example of how to balance anything and everything with play, seriousness, and reality. And in this day and age, with so much stuff going on, we need to learn the balance for ourselves as well as a balance for our homes and family. Because balance is everything. If we don't have balance, we can't create a safe environment. And I'm super excited to have Sarah on this week's episode. So let's get right into it after a word from our sponsors. Hey, I want to thank Alma for sponsoring this week's episode. You know, building a private practice can be really challenging. I know for me, I was so scared of how I was going to get the right clients, the right fit, and them being able to pay. And taking insurance is really scary. Growing your caseload, navigating insurance, and managing billing and paperwork all take so much time. And that's all in addition to doing your best and delivering amazing care to your clients. That's why Alma gives clinicians the tools they need to build thriving private practices. When you join their insurance program, you can get credentialed within 45 days and access enhanced reimbursement rates with major payers. They also handle all the paperwork from eligibility checks to claim submissions and guarantee payment within 2 weeks of each appointment. In addition to their insurance program, Alma offers time-saving tools and administrative support so you can spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering great care to your clients. Learn more about building a thriving private practice with Alma at helloalma.com. That's helloalma.com to get started. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Dude Therapist. We have Sarah Moore. I'm really excited to have her on because, as y'all know, I'm a parenting specialist and I always love learning from other parenting specialists and experts in the world because we all have different tweaks of different ideas and, you know, maybe a different way of putting things that just enlighten ourselves and hopefully the people that we work with to give us perspective. So, Sarah, can you introduce yourself to the listeners before we get into this wonderful conversation?
Yes, and thank you for having me. I'm a big fan of your work as well. I am Sarah Moore, as you mentioned. If people Google me, throw in middle initial R, Sarah R. Moore, just because, as luck would have it, there are 10 billion Sarah Moores in the world. I am the author of Peaceful Discipline and the founder of Dandelion Seeds Positive Parenting. I've got training in everything from interpersonal neurobiology, play, trauma recovery, childhood trauma, and even improv comedy. So I have a big range of experience, and I'm also a master trainer of conscious parenting. And perhaps most importantly, I am a real life parent doing this work alongside you. So it's not just theory, it's practice as well. So thanks for having me.
Yeah. You know, I saw that thing about improv and I was like, you know, what? Like, it just threw me off. But I think, you know, isn't that what parenting is all about? Like going with the flow, trying to figure out the and, you know, statements of what's next, you know, and really kind of pivoting and adjusting and feeding off of the energy that comes from the room versus having a preordained script, so to speak. And I saw that. I'm like, oh, that's genius. I don't know if improv is up my alley, but I love it.
Well, I'll tell you, I was working in corporate America for almost 20 years at the time that I also at night graduated from improv comedy school, not because I thought I was particularly funny, but just because I needed something to balance my corporate life. And it was probably the best parenting tool I ever could have gotten, even though I wasn't even a parent at that point, because you're so right. We do have to be able to roll with it. And instead of fighting reality, just work with it. And that's such a huge paradigm shift.
So just to back up a second, could you tell a little bit about your story? and how you have become a parenting specialist, and kind of that journey of what brought you to this point of your career.
I'd be happy to. So as I mentioned, I worked in corporate America for almost 20 years before I even had my child. So I'm actually 300 years old. I just don't look it.
I was just going to say, I'm like, let's do the math. You don't look older in that way, but good for you, you know?
Thank you. Anyway, yeah. So I had my child and was really conflicted because I'm one of those people who gives 150% to everything I do. I was rising quickly on the corporate ladder for a big international organization. And there I was, you know, 400 months pregnant, ready to burst. And I remember an executive vice president who was a super nice guy, but he leaned over to me and he said, "By the way, Sarah, I remember that you get what, 3 months off paid, but don't worry, we will be secretly funneling you work within a day or two of you having that baby. So we're going to keep you in the loop." And I remember thinking, I'm going to crumble if I do that because I don't want to work people down. But I know that this is the first and probably only child I'm ever going to have, and I really want to do that right too. So long story short, I was on maternity leave. I actually did take legitimate maternity leave plus some unpaid time after that. And at my daughter's 4-month well check, we were with her pediatrician, and he asked how sleep was going. And I answered candidly and said, well, she's still up every couple of hours, but she's 4 months old, and holistically, she's getting plenty of sleep, so I'm not worried. And he looked me in the eye and he said, "Sarah, you are ridiculous. She's manipulating you. Let me know when you're ready to get serious about parenting. Never pick her up when she cries." And I was so floored that I went home and started researching. And lo and behold, he was working with some very outdated information, completely erroneous. And it does behoove us to pick up our children. It helps build their brains, it helps grow their, you know, their neural connections and helps them develop a secure attachment, all of these things that we want them to have. So I started researching and I started writing. And I wanted to be able to empower other parents and caregivers so that if they were ever put in an awkward situation like this, they'd be able to say, actually, I have the research and the data to know that it's good to be responsive to kids. And I learned through my research that that really never expires. And to the extent that we can keep showing up for our children with emotional validation and support and all of the things that we know kids need to thrive, it's only going to benefit not only the child, but also the parent-child dynamic. So eventually I left corporate America and made this my full-time passion to help empower people around the world.
You know, stories like that are so sad for me to hear. Because it is something that I think so many parents have been told. You know, I know for me as a parenting specialist, and, you know, I work with parents and relationships and, you know, I used to work with teenagers, education of parents and especially grandparents, is so difficult because it's not about convincing them, it's just educating them on the new reality and work that has been done. And I say this with all my heart. I cannot blame any of the old generations of parenting. They did what they knew or what were told was the right thing to do. That is no longer the case. It doesn't mean we can't learn some of the things and understand why we did them, what was the reason behind them. And to me, parents still hold on to that. And I got a question recently, and I was waiting to ask you for the, you know, the 80 billion times that we rescheduled because of me, and I appreciate all the patience. How do we deal and model parenting that we hope to show or do for our kids when our partner does not, as well as when we never really discussed it because it wasn't a reality yet, we didn't have kids? So, two-part question. How do we discuss parenting in a practical way when it's theoretical? And when it actually shows up and there is kind of a conflict or distinctive difference, how do we kind of model and educate and help our partners come along to a healthier parenting style?
I love these questions. They are so real and they are such common sources of conflict between couples. So thank you for asking this question.
I'm excited to ask them. You're here. Let's do it, you know?
Yeah. So part one, when it's theoretical, when there are no physical children in the room yet, we do need to be having these discussions with our potential parenting partner. Mm-hmm. And we need to ask some of the tricky questions. We might assume just because we're in love and everything looks great and we just, you know, all of the stars seem to be aligning, we might assume that we're on the same page. But mm-hmm. it's important to ask the questions about mm-hmm. how did your parents raise you? What did mm-hmm. that feel like to you? What happened when you, quote unquote, misbehaved? Did they approach mm-hmm. you with in curiosity, or were you punished for that? What was that like? And we simply work to understand their story. And in understanding their story, it gives us a lot of insight about, is this something they want to perpetuate? And maybe good, healthy stuff, and we're totally aligned, and we agree that we do want to perpetuate these things, but perhaps break these cycles. But we talk about this stuff ahead of time. Or maybe we become enlightened by our potential partner's responses. Maybe they say things like, you know, I'll say a really classic one. And again, this is with compassion and with grace to what people didn't realize was happening before we had the science and the research to back it up. Yeah. But if you're talking with somebody and they say something like, well, I was spanked and I turned out fine, so I'm just going to do that with my kids too, and they'll suck it up and they'll learn to behave or whatever. Well, for me, as the potential partner, I'm going to say, does that actually work for me? For me, Sarah, personally, that's a no. So we get to see, is this something we can work through? But odds are probably pretty high that if they have strong convictions about it now before they even have a child, mm-hmm. it's probably going to be a point of contention once the physical child arrives.
Now, yeah. that being said, can I jump on that for a second?
Yeah, please do.
Like that idea of, I was spanked and I turned out fine, right? Realistically, being spanked once in a while is not going to hurt your child. It creates an unhealthy relationship with you and your child. It might hurt the relationship. Your child is not going to all of a sudden become a psychopath or, you know, because you spank your kid once or twice. But just because you turned out, quote unquote, okay, our goal as parents is not to raise our kids to be okay. We want them to be thriving. So like when I hear, you know, whether it's within families, friend groups, couples, clients that I'm working with, oh, you know, the fear, the intensity, the, you know, the environment, our kids will be just fine. One, you don't know that. And two, there's a reason so many adults are sitting in my office.
Right.
Like, I'm not here to blame the parents. It is just a reality where doubt, anxiety, fear, self-esteem, confidence, self-worth have been perpetuated based on the home. So yeah, your kid's fine. They're going to make money. They're going to have jobs and probably have fine and good relationships and be fine parents as well. You're not, you know, destroying your children. Now, if it's compounded where you're doing it every day and beating your children, it's very different. But yeah. Is really the goal okay? And I hate when people say that. It's like, oh, I turned out just fine. Well, what do you define as fine? Like, what's going on in your heart and in your head about your vision of yourself and your view of people and your relationships? You know, that to me, sorry to cut you off. I just want to make sure that's said.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you said that, you know, and I hear what you're saying. And still, you know, lest we go down a rabbit trail with this, I also want to encourage people. And I talk about a lot of the risks of spanking in my book, Peaceful Discipline, you know, in one simple section. It's not the core of the book, but it is a slippery slope. So I want to encourage people to say, avoid things like that at all costs, because it's really easy that once you start that, well, you do it again and again and again, and you just never know what's going to land as trauma in the child's nervous system.
Very true.
And that can happen even after a single time. So just, you know, go in carefully and know that there are other options. So,
yeah. And to me also, just not to get down the rabbit hole of this, but to me, it's also not about it's not about you hitting the kid. It's about why you feel you need to hit the kid. So like that back end of the behavior is the concern that we have. It's that you feel that by raising your hand and smacking your child, physically imposing yourself on a smaller being is going to teach them something somehow. That is like, that thought process might not lead to other beating or hurt, but that thought process will dictate the intensity and aggression you treat your kids with. It's not just this moment. It kind of, it encapsulates a picture and view of what your representation is in their life.
Yes.
Exactly. That is a huge concern, you know? But to get back to the question before, right? So you talk about it, theoretically, you see what it is. And then let's say you got the kid and things just, you guys don't align.
Yep. Yeah, I hear you. And I hear hundreds of parents and
so many
share this concern about it's causing a major conflict in my marriage and my partnership because, mm-hmm. you know, relationship is okay, but when it comes to parenting, we are on such different pages. And here is the most effective thing you can possibly do. Model the behavior you want to see. Model it in front of your parenting partner. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing, and I can speak firsthand about this because my husband wasn't completely on board with respectful, conscious parenting when we first started parenting. We did talk about mm-hmm. it ahead of time. Everything looked on looked okay on paper. But when reality hit, I learned that we weren't completely aligned. So he learned over time, not that I'm the perfect parent. I promise you I'm not. In fact, in the book, I talk about a lot of mistakes that I've made. But he learned over time that, hey, Sarah, how did you help convince our daughter to do that thing without having to use a bribe, a reward, a punishment? Like, you were just playful about it and she paid attention. Mm-hmm. And he started realizing that it actually works. Because I also learned this lesson early on. When you blame or shame or argue with a parenting partner, they're more likely to dig in their heels and try to prove that they're right. So that's only going to backfire, and it's only going to set you back as a couple or as co-parents. So presuming, I shouldn't presume, but just for the sake of this illustration, if you are in a place where you are parenting together rather than in separate households, the more mm-hmm. you can model how this respectful approach works, the more mm-hmm. likely your partner is to pick up on it. You can also talk about it with them. For example, hey, I had this challenge with our kid earlier today, and I'm really happy that it turned out the way that it did, and I was able to stay peaceful through it. Here's what I did to regulate my feelings. Here's what mm-hmm. I did to still be emotionally authentic while mm-hmm. also getting the job done peacefully, whatever mm-hmm. it was, because they're paying attention. They want to learn. I guarantee you, almost everybody on the planet actually does want to be peaceful. So if you can model that behavior, just like we model behavior for kids, our partners will pick up on that too. Mm-hmm. When you do need to have the discussion with them, what doesn't work is when you go in guns blazing, you're messing up our kid, everything's going wrong, I can't believe you did that to them, because mm-hmm. again, they'll dig in their heels and get defensive about it. Mm-hmm. But instead, and I promise you this is hard, I know firsthand that it's hard, but when you can get curious and say, hey, I saw that it was really a big struggle between you and our kid earlier today, I'm curious what was going on for you, mm-hmm. what's happening for you. Mm-hmm. Do you remember your parents doing anything like that when you were little? How did that mm-hmm. feel? Not in a way to shame them, but in a way to help them think from a lens of empathy about mm-hmm. what the child's perspective might be like. And the more supported your parenting partner feels, the more likely they are to come on board with your gentler approach, because they feel your gentleness coming through to them as well, so that you are partners rather than enemies in this parenting ride together.
Yeah. And I think that's a huge piece right there. That last piece, when we make it you versus me, my way or your way, it gets very, it's an easy route towards defensiveness and protection of your ideals, because then you're not collaborating and you're not being a team. You are fighting against each other to prove whose works better. And we're not here to convince someone whose works better, because the focus is about each other then and not about the kid or right. children. And, you know, I hear a lot, and I love what you said. And the biggest thing that I just the pushback on that, not against it or critiquing it, just to add on to the struggle, there are a lot of, and I hear this a lot, that women and moms are a lot more in line with the concepts and the push and reality of gentle, conscious, aware parenting, you know, more interactive parenting. Yes, it's not permissive. It's not all that stuff. But, you know, boundaries and being aware parenting and all those kind of new terms, which all means very similar things of just being in tune to your kid and being kind and caring and loving. And a lot of husbands, a lot of men struggle with that. And to me, the issue that I see is that the men are afraid of losing control and disobedience. And I heard a father recently in my community is like, are you disobeying daddy? Like that terminology, right? It's this idea of fear of losing control and power. And that's something that I think is a societal issue with men in general. And I think that a lot of men think that the gentle parenting or the kind parenting or aware parenting is weak. So how do we convey the idea that the idea of it not being weakness, but strength and being cognizant of where our kids are at and where we are at as humans? Because that to me is the bigger issue, is like men think it's weak and stupid and, you know, they're going to walk all over us and, you know, permissiveness and all that kind of terminology.
Exactly. You know, some of the guys out there listening might be surprised to hear that I actually really resonate with the male perspective on this. And my heart goes out to you, because you, more than the women, were raised with the cultural narrative that boys were not allowed to express feelings. Boys were not allowed to be vulnerable. Boys were not allowed to reach out for support when they needed it. So above and beyond having to learn all of these things that we now know about parenting, you have these hardwired messages in your psyche that say, I'm not supposed to do any of those things. So I want to, first of all, acknowledge that that's a really hard place to come from. And secondly, say that the paradigm shift here for all of you is to see how incredibly brave it is to be the one who steps away from the crowd and says, I am strong enough and brave enough to lead with compassion, to lead with connection, to lead with love, all of these things that my inner child always needed but was never allowed to do. And when you do that, you are breaking cycles that are incredibly healing for the entire collective of the male narrative. And the strongest men I know are the ones who were brave enough to walk away from that old story.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think that some people are locked into that concept of this intensity of parenting. And, you know, you've worked with so many people. What do you see are some of the more common, I guess, truths that people hold on to that are misguided?
I think you touched on one a moment ago about, if I don't control my kid, they're going to grow up disrespecting me. And the paradigm shift there is, let's take it to an adult narrative just for the sake of illustration. Let's pretend we're all at work. We work at the same big company together, and we think about our boss. If we have a boss who is controlling and demeaning and punitive and all of those things, do we actually respect that boss? It's a pretty easy no. No, we don't. We might do what they say because we want to keep our paycheck, but we don't actually feel any real affinity for this boss. It does not describe a relationship that we really want to be having. If we have a boss who shows up for us and says, you know, hey, I see you're struggling with this project. What's going on for you? Do you need some additional support? Do you need some more resources? Do you need, you know, extension on the deadline? What's going on for you? Let's make sure that we can get this done together, because we're partners for the greater goal. You know, that's somebody who we're going to say, ah, they see me as a human, and I'm actually going to respect that person more because they know that I'm much more than what happens between 8 and 5 in these walls day. So when we remember and we translate to parenting, the people who treat us compassionately, with understanding, with a drive to see our whole self and see what we're feeling, what we're needing, how we can show up better together, these are the people who we ultimately end up respecting more than the ones who simply lay down the law for us. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the most prevalent messages. And it really means we have to redefine where respect comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you a lot, you know. Yeah, on everything. And, you know, for you, with the idea of what are some of the things, positive and maybe negative, that really can impact our kids on a deeper, long-term level, that we might not think is so obvious?
Probably the least obvious, but most important one that comes to mind is doing some of our inner child work.
Mm-hmm.
To figure out what sort of wounds we are carrying forward into our own parenting.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if I learned to believe, because of the way I was treated when I was a child, that my voice doesn't really matter. I don't really get to have a vote in how my life goes. You know, mm-hmm. if big feelings, be they sadness or anger or whatever, I am sent away to process them. If those are the messages that I received as a young child, guess what my triggers are going to be the moment I become a parent? If my child has big feelings, I have to figure out, can I hold space for these feelings? Can I mm-hmm. support this child? Or do I have a nervous system response where I am now in fight or flight because little me, who's still here on the inside, is saying, these things weren't safe for me, so how can I possibly make them mm-hmm. safe for my child? Similarly, if I was punished because I believed I was bad and mm-hmm. therefore deserved punishment, I am going to go into parenting with a lens of my child is probably out to get me. They're probably manipulative. They're probably doing things that they shouldn't be doing because they're bad and therefore mm-hmm. they deserve punishment too. And if I examine that lens and say, maybe that's not true, maybe that's mm-hmm. my story. And maybe now that we know more about child development and we know that all behavior is communication, I can get curious about what's going on beneath the surface for them.
Mm-hmm.
The beautiful thing that happens when I do the hard and brave inner work of figuring out what my narratives were, my inner child gets to heal along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to be as reactive in my parenting and instead can show up with compassion and curiosity for my child, knowing that they are legitimately doing the best they can. And I don't have to carry forward the old narratives that I learned when I was growing up. So I'd say start there, even though it's a huge place to start.
I love that. And you know, you talk a lot about, first of all, what's with the name of your dandelion? Like what's that? Where did that come from?
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Dandelion Seeds Positive Parenting. So I love that you asked this. It's kind of a fun one and not a lot of people ask me about it. When my daughter was about 3, a couple of things were going on. Number one, dandelions were her favorite quote unquote flower. So I wanted to have it as a connection to her.
Beautiful. Second,
we now know from neuroscience and children who are neurologically atypical that we have something called highly sensitive children. And highly sensitive children have nervous systems that are measurably wired differently. You can measure this in fMRI scans, where they literally process input differently than children mm-hmm. who are not highly sensitive. And she yeah. is a sensitive child. Highly sensitive children are often referred to as orchid children. And if you think about the flowers, orchids, they require some special care in order to thrive. Likewise, dandelion children are known as the children who can thrive pretty much anywhere. It's really nearly impossible to bring them down. They're super resilient. So dandelion seeds is along with the concept of let's plant these seeds of dandelion, seeds of resiliency, seeds of strength and abundance to these orchid children, not to change them from who they are, to help give them some of the tools they need to thrive in life.
I love that.
Thank you.
That's so like real, you know. That's such a great that's a really nice way of putting things. You know, you talk about the idea of modeling really often, and you know, we all have our good days and our bad days, and we all struggle. How important is it, and can you talk a little about what and how we model for our kids in a way, because, you know, I hear often, well, I never saw my parents fight, or I see my parents fight all the time, right? So what is the healthy outlook and balance of fighting in front of your kids, having emotions, having big emotions, little emotions, all the things that make up our daily life in front of our kids so that they understand and see what truly goes on as an adult?
I'm a really big fan of emotional authenticity. Oftentimes, to your point, parents have learned to suck it up, not show kids any of the hard stuff, and do it all behind closed doors, including processing our own big feelings, whatever they may be. My opinion, which is based on evidence, is that children actually, when we do that, they miss the opportunity to see how we recover from the hard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe wholeheartedly that it's important to be transparent with our children about what real life is like. That being said, big old disclaimer, we have to keep it age appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Also get to model authenticity. And I'll share a very real, very intimate example that just happened within the past few days. So I was on vacation last week with my family, and I was hoping to see a lifelong friend who I've known since I was 13 years old. And I texted him to say, hey, I'm in town, you know, and I'd only talked to him maybe a couple of weeks before, so it hadn't been very long. Well, he wasn't responding. And for the first time since age 13, him not responding was really weird because he always responds. So after a little while, I texted his wife and said, hey, what's up with Tim? You know, I'm not hearing back from him. Is everything okay?
Mm-hmm.
And much to my shock, she responded and said, I'm so sorry to tell you this, but he's gotten incredibly sick. And within the next few hours, we're moving him into hospice care.
So sorry.
Thank you. Yeah. So I was floored. I was a wreck, you know, didn't see it coming at all. And I was torn because we're on vacation. You know, I want to be happy mama on vacation. Let's have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, this is a very real thing that I was dealing with. So I chose to tell my daughter, you know, well, first of all, I chose to allow tears to flow in front of her. And she's, I should say this too, she'll tell you, she's 9 3/4 years old, not 10 yet, but more than 9. So she's 9 3/4 years old, as only children are so perfect at being really precise with their ages.
Yes.
But anyway, so I chose to let my tears flow. I chose to tell her, hey, I have this really good friend and he's not going to make it. And I need to be sad about that because I'm going to miss him. And I'm really sad that he's going, especially so unexpectedly. So she then knew that everything she was picking up from me emotionally made sense. And I am fully convicted that if I had just sucked it up around her and tried to put on a happy face and go on with vacation, she would have known something was up. So here's the most important point that I'm going to get to. And I did this with my child last week, and I recommend doing it every single time whenever something tricky or difficult comes up. The key part that kids need to see and to hear from us as parents is, what are we going to do about it so that we get back to a point of being okay? I was very clear with her last week to say, I am not okay right now, but I'm going to be okay. Here are the specific steps I'm going to take. Number one, I'm going to talk to somebody about it. Number two, I'm going to write him a letter, even though he'll never be able to read it. It'll help me say the things that need to be said. It'll help me say goodbye to him. And I kind of went on through this list so that she had sort of a roadmap of, okay, mama's sad. Mama has created emotional safety around the concept of sadness. Sadness is not something we have to avoid in life. And then she also showed me what she's going to do to help heal, to help recover from this blow. So whether it's a big thing like I just shared, or perhaps it's a little day-to-day annoyance, you know, if I'm in a tough whatever, I always want to follow up with, here's what I'm doing to make things right again. Here's how Daddy and I worked out our argument after you went to sleep. Again, leaving it age appropriate.
Of course.
But I also want to let her know that here's what I'm doing about it, because I believe that's really where a lot of the resilience comes from. We get to be authentic and we get to show them what the path forward looks like.
Yeah. You know, a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a month ago or so, my wife and I got into a little, you know, tiff or tizzy or argument in the car. And my daughter's like, mommy and daddy, stop, you know, like getting upset, which makes sense. And it caused us to pause and be aware of our behavior and what we were doing. as well as then take an opportunity to explain that mommies and daddies argue, and parents argue, and adults argue, and we're going to be okay and we love each other. But, you know, we have to work things through sometimes. And I think that the more that we are afraid of showing our kids the truth of life and the authenticity that life is, we are doing a massive, not a disservice, we are doing something destructive to their world, thinking that it's this magical, perfect world. I think I heard a quote, the hardest day for a kid is learning that their parents are not superheroes, right? Yeah. I don't want my kids to look at me and think that I'm perfect. I want them to look at me and realize that I'm imperfect and that's okay. And they love me anyways, and that I love them. And it doesn't mean that we have to be screaming on purpose in front of our kids and causing conflict and dismay around our children just on purpose to show them the truth of life. But, you know, when death happens, talk to them about it. Be real. When sadness happens, talk about it to them. Be real. When happiness happens, talk about it. Be real. Success, failures, ups and downs, frustrations, annoyances, every emotion and every reality of life, just talk to them. Because the more you let them understand for themselves and they come to terms with those things, the better they grow, the healthier they become, and the more full of a human they are. And it saddens me when I work with people and like, yeah, I never saw conflict in my home. So I'm not saying that it's a good thing that there's conflict. I'm just saying, well, how do you know what it's like when you have your first conflict in your relationship? Someone told me, I was working with someone, they said the first time they had a fight in their marriage, they thought they were getting divorced. Because they never saw conflict in their house.
Wow.
It was like 2 weeks after their wedding, they had some argument about something simple. Yeah. And it just got heated and they had an argument and she was distraught. And the husband's like, what's wrong? It's like, that's it. You're leaving me. He's like, no, I'm not.
Right.
We had an argument. We'll be fine later. I love you. Right. But if our kids don't see conflict in reality, they live in this dream magic world that is not healthy.
Exactly.
So what is the line that's crossed then? When is it too much? What does it mean when it's too much? How do we understand that or dictate that or do that for our kids? What is that line that we shouldn't cross then?
I have a big belief that we really need to be following the child's lead. Mm-hmm. Children are great at asking questions. They will ask when they want to know more. But one of our biggest failings as parents is that we overshare. We get into so much detail that is not appropriate for their level of interest or the level of understanding or level of maturity. So start with the basic version of what it is they have asked. If they want to know more, they will ask more. Mm-hmm. And answer that one next question. And you continue until they're done. Mm. But when they're done, they're actually done. So our job is not to go in and explain the further intricacies of all the things they haven't asked about. So we need to stop oversharing and instead simply ask, what's my child actually asking me right now?
I love that. Okay, last question. For any parent who might be listening, or prospective parent, who is struggling to find the balance of parenting and that gentle parenting because of society, because how they were raised, or anything, can you give 1 to 3 tips on how to start the process or learn what parenting means for you?
Absolutely. Number one is start so, so small. Many people make the mistake of going in and saying, I am going to be a quote unquote gentle parent. And then guess what happens? Tomorrow, they wake up and get out of bed, stub their toe. They say something cross to their child and they think, oh no, I have totally ruined it. I am no longer a gentle parent because I said this cross thing to my child. That's not how it works at all. What I want you to do is find moments of gentleness in your parenting. Don't go for perfection. When you go for perfection, that's usually where so-called mom guilt and shame and whatever other role, you know, equivalents are out there come from. But simply look for the small wins and pay attention to those. Mm-hmm. When is parenting usually easiest for me? Maybe a really solidly good, gentle parent early in the morning, but I struggle later on in the day or at bedtime or whatever. Well, before you even address the bedtime part, focus and thrive where you shine and see if you can make that just your A game. And when you feel like you have fully nailed that section, Then you move on in little tiny baby steps to say things like, what can I do to make nighttime more peaceful for us? And then you get really specific with your goals. Maybe it's just in the bedroom when I'm about to turn off the lights. What can I do in that moment to make it a more peaceful process? And the more specific you are with the more detailed goals you can create for yourself, the more accessible it's going to feel, as opposed to this blanket unrealistic reality of, you know, oh, I'm just going to be this gentle parent all the time. Because guess what? We're all human. We're all going to have days and moments where we mess up. So give yourself a whole lot of grace while you are learning. It is a practice and nobody's perfect.
I love that. Thank you so much for being on the show and enlightening people and listening to, you know, giving such great content and ideas on what it means to kind of really model and show up for ourselves, which then authentically shows up for our kids.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me and for doing the work that you do.
Thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Dude Therapist. It means a lot to me because without you, the listeners, this podcast can't happen. So every listen, every download, every rate, review, and share means so much to me. And I hope you enjoyed these conversations as much as I did. Talking about wellness, mental health, and relationships is one of my passions. And that's what this podcast is all about. So thanks so much for tuning in. As always, if you have any questions, concerns, ideas, thoughts, collaborations, email me at thedudetherapist@gmail.com. Always feel free to DM me on Instagram @thedudetherapist. Don't forget to be kind to yourself and to others. And as always, see you next time on the Dude Therapist Podcast. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Dude Therapist. We have Sarah Moore, who is the author of Peaceful Discipline, Story Teaching, Brain Science, and Better Behavior, and the founder of Dandelion Seeds Positive Parenting. As a master trainer in conscious parenting and board member for the American Society for the Positive Care of Children, she's also a public speaker, armchair neuroscientist, and most importantly, a mama. With training in child development, trauma recovery, interpersonal neurobiology, improv comedy, and play, her work supports parents and caregivers around the globe. Check her out on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, Pinterest, and Threads. Sarah is a wonderful example of how to balance anything and everything with play, seriousness, and reality. And in this day and age, with so much stuff going on, we need to learn the balance for ourselves as well as a balance for our homes and family. Because balance is everything. If we don't have balance, we can't create a safe environment. And I'm super excited to have Sarah on this week's episode. So let's get right into it after a word from our sponsors.